Summer is just about here, which means it's time to start barbecuing again. Whether you're going to the beach or having a small cookout in your yard, Charbroil has a grill to fit your needs. If you use our link, you can get a Charbroil one-burner portable grill for just over $100, and it's perfect for wherever you need to cook. It's convenient and portable, and works just as well in the backyard as it does on the go. Just go to multipleworldproductions.com/sponsors and use our link to shop all the great products Charbroil has to offer.
It's evening. Good evening and welcome to 30 Minute Reviews. I am Adam on an absolutely packed news episode. So we won't be talking about Bottle Rocket today because we have a lot of other stuff to talk about. So let's start out with, what do I have on my itinerary first? Let's talk about Marvel first. Marvel will be skipping San Diego Comic-Con this year. That news broke yesterday. And look, let's be real about this. People are going to think it's conspiracy. People are going to think they're misguided since Infinity War and Endgame, and they don't know what their path's going to be. I think it's a much simpler explanation. I think that at the end of the day, Marvel doesn't want to have to make announcements and then recant on them. They've done it a ton in recent history. They made announcements of the Phase 4 slate that they announced back in 2019 is not reflective of reality at this point. There was a Blade movie announced. Like, there were movies they announced that were like, we're not even getting into Black Panther 2. We're not even getting into what was the other one? We're not even going to get into, you know, Captain Marvel 2. We're not even going to get into, you know, Fantastic Four or anything like that. And those movies are on the docket, and like, they've come out before some movies that were announced there, and we got casting there. And I think that they don't want to go out there and make announcements that they can't keep, especially with the ongoing writer's strike, especially with the ongoing, with the potential of a SAG strike and a potential of a DGA strike. And it's like they don't want to go out there and make announcements and then they can't stick to them. They don't want to go out there and be like, okay, and here's Fantastic Four. We're going to stick to this release date. They would rather just, you know, do it out on the official release slate. People who care will find out that way. And then if they don't make an official announcement, they can change it, and it's not a big deal. Once you commit to a release date, then it becomes this is a date the public now knows, especially if you do something at Comic-Con. We're going to trot people out and do that. On top of that, I'm not 100% certain if we have a writer attached. There's got to be a writer attached at this point. They have a director. I think Matt Shackman's directing. But you're in a situation now where these people are not going to be, you know, able to come out and do it. The same goes for, like, you know, what if there is a SAG strike? By the time San Diego comes, we will know that. And you can't do that. On the other side of things, DC is likely gearing up to announce their Superman casting, presumably at San Diego. I haven't seen anything about DC skipping San Diego, and I think there's a chance that DC Studios will come out and will be like, here, we're going to do a big Hall H panel, and we're going to be like, here is our, you know, here's all our cool stuff coming, like, from DC Studios. Here is who we have cast as Lois Lane. Here is who we have cast as Superman. Here is who we have cast as Lex Luthor. Here is, you know, some test footage of them in the role. Here is, you know, us doing, you know, some other thing. And if you look at it that way, it's like, if I'm Disney, I don't want to compete with DC. I don't want to have to share, you know, the news cycle with the casting of Superman, which, with things that may or may not be coming out on time. And it's just not a great look all around. So I would say, skip it. We'll do our own thing at D23 in September. By that point, the writer's strike should be over. By that point, we should be, you know, we will know if a SAG strike has happened or if a SAG strike has been averted. Like, by that point, we will have answers to these things. And I think, too, that Disney's unforced error, which we'll talk about in a little bit more, regarding the AI use in the intro for Secret Invasion that I haven't watched yet, But the use of AI there was a big mistake, and that's going to help bolster public opinion against the AMTPT. So we could be seeing a resolution to the strike sooner rather than later. And the same goes for the Screen Actors Guild. Between that and The Flash, you know, we are going to be moving towards AI not being used in these capacities. And I think we're going to get a quicker resolution because of these two things not being well received. And the reason I said we're going to talk about that a little bit more, despite me not seeing it, is that this is going to transition into our second story. Warner Brothers has taken the extraordinary steps of removing key people at Turner Classic Movies and not replacing them. They remove head of programming, they remove the people who run the TCM Film Festival. These are all things that are, you know, not being handled in under this new regime. And I think that what we're looking at, and the reason why I say this ties into Marvel is because they got very lucky that they did this on the first day of Secret Invasion, and Secret Invasion has this AI-designed intro, because that becomes the story. That becomes the thing that everyone's going to talk about for the next week, and how it's like, that's awful, they are fucking over artists, all of things that are accurate, but at the same time, the bandwidth is going there and not to the issue of preservation. It's not going to the issue of Warner Brothers is not, you know, Warner Brothers is actively taking steps to make it harder for people to get into film by doing this. And that's been the case for a lot of this. What we have is a man who is openly contemptuous of the process that goes into, you know, running a studio like this, and is now in charge of it. He sees it as a way to try and make money. He sees it as, you know, this is how I ran Discovery. And look, the thing is, if you look at what he did during his tenure at Discovery, like, look at the Food Network, the difference between pre-Zaslav and post-Zaslav, and tell me that it is, like, for shareholders, this is a much better thing. But the outcome of what he has done has been catastrophic. Because look at what it is. It's a bunch of game shows and travel shows. And while the travel shows seem good on the surface, there have been articles in, like, The Atlantic and in other sources like that that say that these travel shows, like Diners, Drivers, and Dives, and Bizarre Foods, and Carnival Eats, and all these kind of shows, they do irreparable damage to the places that they're going to. And shows like Kitchen Nightmares, stuff like that, that's a Fox show, Kitchen Nightmares, or it was a Fox show, or like Restaurant Impossible, I think, is still on Food Network. They outprice the areas they're from, and end up, those restaurants end up going out of business. And then restaurants that are featured on these things are like the best foods I ever ate or anything like that. They end up causing this issue where too many people end up traveling there as tourism things in the immediate aftermath of it airing. Then the locals who were going and keeping the place going stop going there because it's too crowded and they can't get in. Then once the episode has aired and then it's not aired in syndication, or it is aired in syndication, but not enough where it's going to get featured, then the restaurant ends up going out of business. This has been a recurring kind of epidemic as a result of these shows on the Food Network. And what we're looking at here is, with him trying to get rid of TCM, it is a fundamental lack of understanding of the importance of TCM. I've seen people say, like, oh, just buy physical media. And I've been a big proponent of physical media over streaming because of there's the perception of convenience with streaming, but there is also the actuality of, if I'm trying to watch something specific, streaming is a hindrance. If I'm trying to find something to watch, streaming is a benefit. But if I'm looking for something specific, then streaming doesn't help. And if we're going to roll back TCM and get rid of TCM, that's going to get rid of a key way for people to, without commercials, without some other ulterior motive, being able to not only watch a movie, but get historical context for a movie and get, you know, an analysis of the movie in a way that you don't get in other places. Channels like Movies, channels like AMC, channels like, you know, even like Showtime and HBO and all these other networks, they don't do those intros where they tell you about the movie and the history of the movie in a brief way, a brief and succinct way, but you don't have that in other places. You don't have a commercial-free thing for these movies, where it's like, you're going to sit down, you're going to be able to watch it beginning to end. Like, Turn On Movies, the channel that I have it on basic cable, I don't know what the exact channel is, but it's called Movies. You have a commercial every 15 minutes, and it's like, okay, like, to the point where it's like, they have a great selection of movies that they run, but you're not going to watch that channel, because you have to sit there and watch commercials every 15 minutes. TCM, you will watch things that you have never heard of. You can sit there and you can watch old silent films that are being preserved through TCM, and, you know, you may not have heard of before. Like, for example, I found out about, what was it? Like, Metropolis, I watched for the first time on TCM. I found out about, you know, movies that are among some of my favorites, like The Roaring Twenties, I found through TCM. Footlight Parade with James Cagney, I found through TCM. Like, this, and remove the personal aspect away from it. Remove all of that. Finding old movies on streaming is difficult, because the streamers all are producing original content. They are going to prioritize showing their original content because they put money into doing that. They're also going to prioritize the non-original content that is a draw to the thing. So if you go on Paramount, Paramount has a huge back catalog of old movies on Paramount Plus, but you're going to have to dig through a bunch of stuff to find it because they don't have a coherent way to look through the app and find the old stuff, because they'd rather show you 90s Nickelodeon, which admittedly, when we do our Christmas special, that's the goal, is to do 90s Nickelodeon on Paramount Plus. But at the same time, they don't, you know, they would rather show you that because that's a draw to the streamer. At the same time, you know, something like TCM being held on as a brand on the same level as the Discovery Channel and as Food Network, which is 700 seasons of Beat Bobby Flay, feels disingenuous. And I feel like there needs to be a broader conversation about the importance of film preservation and all of that, and making it accessible. Because if we're going to rely on the streamers to do that, we're going to end up in a situation where we're going to end up stagnating as an art form with movies, where it's like, instead of being able to go back and be like, okay, so here is the entire history of film being broadcast, where you can go back beginning to end. Like, they do special documentaries where they go through everything. Like you'll see movies you've never heard of, good movies, bad movies, no matter how good or bad it is, they will air it, and they will give you a little bit of historical context. This is what the movie is, this is where it came from, this is where it came from at the time, this is why this movie is the way it is. And look, you can kind of get something similar through Criterion, but Criterion is not on cable. Like, the average person flipping through the channels will not run into Criterion, because Criterion is not a cable network. And therein lies the issue. I think the best outcome here, as it is now, is that Criterion ends up buying the network out from Warner Brothers. I don't know how likely that is, but I think another network buying it out and running it would be the smartest thing right now. I don't think that as it is here, this is a tenable situation. Especially if it goes away, because that is, you know, how many people watched TCM and ended up, you know, learning something about the way films are made, or different, you know, artistic, you know, styles, or different narrative styles, or things from movies that we don't talk about anymore. Unless we're talking about The Godfather, or Citizen Kane, or Star Wars, or The French Connection, or anything else, like, I mean, maybe All About Eve, if someone wants to really go deep on a movie, or Sunset Boulevard, or, you know, something like that. Like, if not for those, then people don't talk about old movies. And TCM's a great resource for, like, here are old movies you've never heard of, here are old movies that you can't go on Amazon and buy a copy of, like, and do that. Like, there are so many movies that are just on TCM. And I think that it is a massive problem if we're not going to have these movies available for people to watch in a easy way, where you can just turn on your TV and, oh, look, this is on. Like, that is a major, major, major problem going forward. And look, at the end of the day, I don't want someone like, my issue is if Paramount buys it, or if another network buys it, does it end up paywalled? Like, do we end up with, like, oh, okay, Apple's going to end up buying it. Is Apple going to keep it on cable, or is Apple going to move it behind a paywall on Apple TV Plus? And I don't think that's a solution either. Whoever the buyer is needs to be, if someone's going to buy it, the buyer needs to keep it on broadcast television. Otherwise, it defeats the purpose of it. Because, look, I mean, if they get rid of TCM, the channel, the proponents would be like, oh, well, you can still watch it on Max. And the point isn't that you can watch it on Max. The Max selection is greatly lacking compared to what they show on broadcast. The Max selection, like, I scroll through it every once in a while, it doesn't change often, and it's not reflective of what's being shown on the network. You can find movies like Splendor in the Grass, but they're going to keep the ones on there that are popular, that are going to keep people going to the app. Oh, I want to watch A Star Is Born? Okay, it's on there. Oh, Sunset Boulevard is an evergreen title on there. The Searchers is an evergreen title on there. Three Godfathers is an evergreen title on there. And what needs to happen is you need to have it as, you know, broadcast. Because number one, broadcast rights are different from streaming rights. And number two, you get a broader access to what they're going to show. In a weird way, the television network version of TCM is more lucrative and more important than the streaming aspect of it. So hopefully we end up in a situation where a company like Apple or like Paramount will buy it and keep the network running as a thing like that. Because imagine, if you will, a situation where if Paramount were to buy it, the back catalog of Paramount titles added to that would be great. But I think that there needs to be the understanding that if someone's going to buy it, the two key things are commercial free. I mean, three key things. Commercial free, you need to have, what's it called? You need to have a key thing of, you know, the importance of it being on broadcast, and you need to have the insights from experts. Otherwise, there's no point in having the network. If they're not going to keep all three of those things, as well as the good mix of movies, then what's the point of any of this? And I think that getting rid of... We're looking at today the start of the slippery slope that leads to the end of TCM. And I think that is catastrophic for film as a whole. But look, I think we can wrap that conversation up, because I don't think there's really too much more to say on it. And we do want to get on to more positive things. So let's get into... What are the two other stories I have here? I have the Nintendo Direct. Okay, let's do the Kraven trailer as a kind of bridging the gap from shitty into good. Because it's... I think that the Kraven trailer, there is potential. And I feel like an idiot for saying that. Because I feel like I've been through this before. We, you know, back at when they did Venom, we were like, okay, maybe Venom could be good, and then it wasn't. Morbius, I don't think anyone was saying Morbius could be good, and then Morbius was absolute shit. I don't think this is going to be Morbius bad. I think it's going to be a step above Morbius, but a step, like, leagues below. Like, I think there's a sizable gap between Morbius and Venom. I think we're going to be closer to Morbius than Venom, but I think it's going to be between the two. I'm not a huge fan of the changes they're making, because at the end of the day, to have him as a protagonist, you need to make him somewhat likable. And I think that fundamentally we're running into this issue, and I think we talked about this with Morbius last year. Fundamentally, you need to have a bad guy and then have someone worse than the bad guy to have them fight. And the issue is, the superhero will have a villain who can act as a foil to a key part of their personality. You are not going to have that with the villain of a movie, because they don't need that. The villain is designed to be the obstacle to overcome. Herein lies the problem with their repeatedly doing this. We don't have a villain for him to fight. He's fighting Rhino, he's fighting Chameleon. Calypso's in the movie. Like, there is stuff here that they're going for, and I understand that, but at the same time, we don't necessarily need this movie to exist. Besides that, they're building a really wonky Sinister Six, where it's like you watch this trailer, and it's like, if they're on the list, they end up dead, and it's like, okay, so the movie's gonna end with him looking at the list and crossing off Rhino, or crossing off Chameleon, or crossing off whoever needs to cross off, and then him looking down the list and getting to the bottom, and it's either Spider-Man or Venom, and it's like, alright, cool, I guess, but, like, that's not gonna be a good enough reason to see this in a theater. And I'm not a huge fan of them making him into a conservationist. I'm not a huge fan of them making him into a lover of all animals, because that's not who he is. Like, again, if you want to tell this story, do an original character, but you're trying to capitalize on IP in an attempt to get people into a theater, and you run the issue of it doesn't work right because no one, you know, like, it's not the same, like, it's not the same thing at all. You're fundamentally altering the character to a point where you can make a new character. And I think that you can, like, I'm gonna see the movie because I do the podcast, but I'm not happy about this movie coming out. And I think that, you know, people need to stop seeing Venom and let there be Carnage and the inevitable Venom 3 next year or 2 years from now. Like, we need to, as a society, just be like, we're not doing this anymore, Sony. Like, you make Spider-Man movies. Like, you put these characters in a Spider-Man movie, we'll watch it. Like, that shot in at the end of the trailer, which is the poster of him sitting there and recreating that iconic scene from the comics, like, I buy Aaron Taylor Johnson in that shot as Kraven the Hunter. I would watch him as Kraven the Hunter in a Spider-Man movie. Him facing off against Tom Holland, or him facing off against Andrew Garfield. Or if they wanted to bring back Tobey Maguire and have him face off against Tobey Maguire. Like, that would be a fantastic send-off to Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man. As you do a Logan-style movie of him facing off against Kraven the Hunter, where it's like, I've faced off against all these other villains before, and he's just, look, I'm going to kill you. Like, I'm going to beat you. You know, I just want to prove that you can be beaten. And I think that would have been a fantastic send-off for that. Like, that would have been a great way to end it. But the issue is you don't have a villain here for him to face off against. And that is fundamentally the problem here. And the villains they're choosing, like, Venom, okay. But, like, Morbius and Kraven are not villains that are like, okay, they have a weird moral code. So, like, I can see them facing off against someone who's worse. But they're kind of forcing that issue now with this, where it's like, oh, well, he's going to fight Rhino. And it's like, all right, I guess. And Rhino is also a hybrid, like, you know, kind of, like, mutate, I guess, is the term they use in Marvel for the, like, you know, a mutant is someone who's born with the abilities. A mutate is someone who has something happen to them, and then they develop the abilities. Like, I'm curious to see how that goes. And I'm not super gung-ho about this movie. Nothing about the action really inspires confidence, and nothing about past performance inspires confidence either. But we'll see. But let's wrap up with the biggest story of the day. The biggest story of the day being the Nintendo Direct that happened this morning, in which Nintendo fundamentally won, you know, the contest of all of the various developers who are trying to put out new content. And it's not even close. It's not even a contest. Nintendo came to play, and they did. They opened with the DLC for Scarlet and Violet, showing off more footage, showing off what the Blueberry or whatever it is Academy is going to look like. The design is awesome, the underground thing. My one hesitation is we don't have a release date yet, and it says fall, so I'm thinking September. I mean, look, it's gotta be, it's a weird situation, because they're putting out Super Mario Wonder. Super Mario Bros. Wonder is their big title for September, or October. It's coming out October 20th. November 17th is Super Mario RPG. Also mixed in there is WarioWare Micro. This is a fucking stupid thing I'm watching right now. This truck is making a poor decision. Like, Super Mario RPG is another one of their big titles. That's coming out in November. Like, obviously, the second DLC pack that's for the winter comes out in December. And that is, you know, that's their big December release. But when they say fall, do they mean early September? Do they mean late August? At which point, why is there no date yet? Which is my only issue, is that it's like, I don't think we're going to have a date. Like, why is there no date on these? And why are they being like, oh, we'll have more information at a later date? These are big titles. Like, this is a big DLC for two of their biggest games of last year. And I think the other thing is, too, there's no hook. And granted, like, when they did Sword and Shield and they did the Arctic, or the Crown Tundra and all of that, Crown Tundra was the bigger of the two, and Crown Tundra didn't get their big announcement until much later, after the fact. where it's like, oh, I don't think the Legend raids were announced until much closer to release. But we don't have something like that at this point to really generate hype. I think that's an area of concern of mine. And the other thing I want to address with this is, where are they going next year? Are they gonna, like, I think that the Pokemon Company, and look, I'm giving advice to a franchise that is one of the most profitable, if not the most profitable, franchise on the planet, and I'm giving them advice, and they definitely don't need it, but if it came down to it, it's like they really should have more than one team working on games, because at the same time, this guy's gonna fuck up over here too now. At the same time, like, okay, so has the team been working? Like, I think what's going to end up happening is this year's the DLC, and next year is another remake, or another, what's it called, or another Legends, or another Let's Go. Me personally, I would hope it's Let's Go, Johto, whatever they call Let's Go Johto, because I think Let's Go was a great onboarding thing for whoever's, you know, coming. And I think that we're looking at the end of the Switch life cycle. I think that you want to get... I would assume that the Pokemon Company is being given dev kits for whatever the new hardware is. Like, I would assume that's the case. So if they're getting that dev kit, I would assume that they're working on Gen 10 on that. And presumably they want that to launch reasonably close to the new hardware. Because if we look at what we've had on the Switch, we had Let's Go, we had Brilliant Diamond Shining Pearl, which I know a lot of people didn't like, but I didn't mind, Sword and Shield, Scarlet and Violet, and Legends Arceus. So are we at a point now where this was them trying this out, and they're going to do... Like, I think if you're launching Gen 10, Gen 10 has to be on the next one. Because I think going... Like, if we look at past things, it's like the Game Boy was Gen 1, Game Boy Color was Gen 2, Game Boy Advance was Gen 3. Then once we get to Gen 4, we start to double up. We had, what's it called? We had Gens 4 and 5 on the DS, Gens 6 and 7 on the 3DS, and then Gen 8 and 9 on the Switch. I don't think they do Gen 10 on the Switch, too. I think Gen 10 goes to whatever the next thing is, and they want to, you know, if they're going to have the hardware this far out, they want to make sure it's working right and that it's doing good work. So I think that the smart move, which I don't know if they're going to do the smart move is put put out a Let's Go, or put out Black and White, or put out Legends, you know, I wouldn't do Legends, you know, do Legends Kanto Johto as one thing, because I don't think you could do Legends Kanto, because I just think that that wouldn't work, because I don't think there's enough of a mythos around the three birds for that to work, unless they do Legends Kanto, and it's just Mew. But either way, I mean, they found Mew in the real world, if I remember my lore correctly. But either way, like, I think that there is a world in which they do that. And that is what tides people over during that. And the other thing is, I was very surprised about this Direct. No announcement of new stuff on Switch Online. No online expansion, nothing like that. Because it's like, I'm still waiting for some of the games that they announced months ago at the last Direct to come to that, but none of that yet. But look, I think that, you know, early next year, when the next Pokemon Direct happens, because the Pokemon Direct happens every year in January, I think they announce a new, not, what's it called? It's a new, not Gen 10 game. I think that they go into, you know, I think in all likelihood, I think they do Legends as their next game after that. Legends something else. Legends Hoenn, Legends, you know. I think what could also happen is they could do what they did this time and do remake something, remake Black and White maybe, with that, and then go into, you know, go into, like, remake Black and White with an outside studio, and then go into, which I think would be weird because of how much different Black and White looks from Diamond and Pearl, remake that in that same chibi style, and then do Legends Unova. But all of this is conjecture on my part. But also, I mean, as long as we're doing Pokemon stuff, like, I'm surprised they haven't remade Colosseum yet. Colosseum and XD, those games are very well made games, and they're very different to the point where it would be interesting to see them remade on the Switch. I'm surprised they haven't yet. We did get a few remake announcements that I'm very excited about. Like, when they announced the remake of, of Super Mario RPG, I was like, perfect. Like, this is what I want. I want Super Mario RPG remade in the modern era. This looks really fun. I'm really looking forward to it. It's one of my more anticipated movies at the end of the year, more anticipated games at the end of the year, and I want to see that game come to full fruition. That I'm looking forward to. And then they also announced a remake of Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon, which I was like, all right, cool, and that's coming out in 2024, but what about bundling it in with the original Luigi's Mansion? Like, can we move the original Luigi's Mansion to the Switch as well? Because I'd like both if we're going to do that. And then on top of that, too, it's like, let's look at the other things that are coming out. You know, they shadow-dropped or stealth-released Pikmin 1 and 2, which came out today, because Pikmin 4 is coming out in a few weeks. And, you know, that's a great idea. Like, I love them stealth releasing these things, but while we're doing these remakes, like, Colosseum and XD feel like no-brainers to me. The original Chibi-Robo probably should be in that list. And then if we're talking other games that they did in that era, you know, maybe a remake of the original Animal Crossing. Maybe a remake of... there was another big game from the GameCube era that I was like, that would be perfect for a remake. Oh, Paper Mario 1000 Year Door. Can we get that remade? What about Mario and Luigi? Superstar Saga, which is on Switch Online, but maybe this motherfucker is still stuck trying to get his way out of here. He's not going to make that. That is too tight of a turn. You got to go out. Okay, whatever. He'll figure it out. Mario and Luigi Superstar Saga and Partners in Time, I think, is the one that is kind of criminally underrated of these games because we don't see enough of it when it makes its way to, you know, to other things. Like, we ended up with Bowser's Inside Story getting ported to the 3DS, and I think the fourth one was Paper Jam, which is also on the 3DS. But all things said, we didn't get we didn't get a new one for, like, Partners in Time never got ported outside of, I think it was on the DS, but it never got ported to the 3DS. It never ended up, you know, outside of that console, and it never really gets talked about in the pantheon of these games. And the same goes for Thousand Year Door, and I would say, if they're going to do that, I want them to do a trilogy and do all three of the Paper Mario games, excluding Sticker Star and excluding, you know, obviously Origami King, which came out on the Switch. But Origami King was not that bad, and a lot of people hated on it. But, like, maybe do, you know, Thousand Year Door, maybe do Paper Mario and Super Paper Mario and move those over and see how that carries. Maybe they're just waiting to see, does RPG sell well? If RPG sells well, do we go into, do we double down on this? And if so, you know, that's more of a reason to get into, you know, Super Mario RPG. Which I'm surprised they're calling Super Mario RPG and they're not calling it, Seven Silver Stars. Like, that would have been, I think that's a smarter marketing choice. But whatever, they know what they're doing. We touched on the new WarioWare game, which I was interested in when they first showed it, and then they showed it with all motion controls, and I was like, I'm a lot less interested in this now. I don't like motion controls in games, especially when you don't need to do motion controls. And then there was also, you know, all the new Pikmin 4 stuff looks great. I'm here for it. I'm all in on, you know, Pikmin 4, and I will be getting that game next month when it comes out. And Super Mario Wonder, obviously, is the other really big title to come out of this. And it looks like, I like that this is the first time that a 2D Mario platformer is coming out, and I'm interested in it for the first time since New Super Mario, or New Super Mario 2, where they, for the 3DS. That was the last time that I was excited for a game like this, and they managed to get me excited for it with this new title. All the new stuff with the Wonder Flower looks great. Elephant Mario looks really cool, and it seems like an interesting idea. I'm for all of this. I just, you know, and I think too, if we look at what the other studios have done this year, far and away, Nintendo has the best announcements for the first half of the, for the back half of this year, and it leaves it open where we're gonna have another Direct by the end of the year, because their 2024 is kind of sparse. Because all we have for 2024, ambiguously, are the remake of Dark Moon and this new Princess Peach game that looks admittedly pretty cool, but, you know, with that, with only those two things coming out in the early half of next year, they will need to spruce it up. And again, Pokemon's going to come along in January to announce their new thing for November of next year. I just don't think Nintendo's going to want Pokemon to compete. So I think Pokemon ends up a September title. Because I don't think they're going to... Number one, I don't think they want to... Hang on. See, here's the weird thing about the Sword and Shield stuff. Because I just looked it up because I was curious. Isle of Armor came out on June 17th. Crown Tundra came out on October 22nd. Which puts us in this weird place where, like, are they going to do both of these that close together? Like, there was a six-month, or, like, June is, so there's a four-month difference between them. Obviously, if you're doing fall and winter, you can't do that again. But are they going to do, now, I'm looking again, what I did was just to get an answer on this. I went back and looked at the trailer, and it has the Teal Mask, which is part one, slated for release in fall 2023. The Indigo Disc released, slated for winter 2023. Now, I think that if we're looking at this, like, winter 2023 is a very specific, like, December, like, thing. Because it's, like, I don't think they're going to say winter 2023 and be like, oh, we mean, like, the season winter of 2023, which goes into, like, 2024. Like, I don't think that they move that back into, like, January or February 2024. I think that this means we're getting both DLCs in this calendar year. Otherwise, they just say, they would say fall and winter. Because then that gives you the more broad season. But by saying 2023, you are locking yourself into this year. So I think that that means that we get a September release and then a December release. Or an August release and then a December release. But unless they're doing that, I don't know why they wouldn't just lock in the dates today. Especially for part one. Which is indicating to me that the possibility this gets delayed possibly further into 2024. Otherwise, I think they would have given us a date. Am I right? Am I wrong? Let me know in the comments on Spotify. When do you think that Pokemon Scarlet and Violet DLC will be coming out? We don't know, because they didn't tell us. But we have a bunch of stuff happening this week. Let me bring up my schedule, which you can go to mwpnews.com and click on the link that says This Week in Podcast, and you can see all the cool things that we're doing. So, this morning, our new episode of Exploring Hyperspace Lanes went up, which is at exploringhyperspacelanes.com, where me and Josie talk at length about Attack of the Clones. We were going to do Bottle Rocket today, but that's not happening. Tomorrow morning, we have episode one of Marvel's Secret Invasion. We'll be talking about that, not just the AI-driven intro, but the entire episode. And tomorrow evening, we'll be talking about the new Jennifer Lawrence raunchy comedy, No Hard Feelings. On Friday, early in the morning, or, you know, our usual time, we'll be talking about Star Trek Strange New Worlds Season 2, Episode 1. In the early afternoon, we'll be talking about Viewfinder, out of Steam Next Fest, new demo. And in the evening, we'll be talking about Asteroid City, the new Wes Anderson movie. We have a packed day on Sunday, on Saturday. On Saturday morning, we have Stray Gods, the new game from, I think, Troy Baker's director on it, which is a musical RPG. We'll be talking about that in the morning. In the afternoon, we'll be talking about Season 3, Episode 5 of iCarly. And at some point in the afternoon, we will also have an episode going up here about Fairly Odd Parents Breaking the Rules, the GameCube game from the early 2000s. And in the afternoon, we'll be talking about The Blackening. Next week is also Indiana Jones, so we'll be talking about Indiana Jones next week. But we'll wrap up there for today. And until our next episode on this channel, and on all the channels, which again, you can go to MWPnews.com. You can view links to all of our stuff. If there's any news that happens, we do news there routinely. New trailers, anything that goes up, we go there. And until our next episode, have a great rest of your week.
If you enjoyed this show, be sure to check out our other shows. We have Beware of Spoilers, where we talk about new release movies. We have 30-Minute Reviews, where we talk about older stuff and current events in the entertainment industry. And we have Exploring Hyperspace Lanes, where every week Josie and I get together to talk about random stuff in our lives. And also, we rank and review everything Star Wars. Old stuff, new stuff, all of it. And you can find all of these shows on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, or wherever you find your podcasts. Or, to get it simply, just go to BewareOfSpoilers.com, or ExploringHyperspaceLanes.com, or 30MinuteReviews.com, and it'll redirect you right to the Spotify page. Thank you, and thank you for enjoying our content.